Maar staat uit, hè? Oké, maar ik moet hem gebruiken voor de radio. Oké. Can I ask all of you to sit on this side? Okay, prima. And I have another small question or another issue that we should handle. Does anyone here has trouble if we conduct the workshop in English? Or no one? This is your last chance to say that, okay? If there is a problem with language, and I think most of us are... je ne parle pas français. De français. If there is anything, I mean, you're always welcome to raise any questions. If you want to, I'm kind of nice, so you can sit closer to me, just if you want to.
In the grote zaal, in the workshop, stay here over debatteren. En aan de slide is er naar de praktische.
Okay.
In the main hall, next weekend here, the workshop about theory on dating is going to start. And afterwards, there's a short break.
Good to have all of you here. Yeah, it would be nice, actually. Thank you.
So, the first one is starting right now in the canteen.
There goes our emergency exit, I guess. Okay. We'll do that. I'll explain to you why there is a microphone over here. I put this aside just to make the distance between us a little bit less. The microphone is here for the radio, I think, and also to record this. So it's not amplified in this room. And I'm sorry for looking so silly and speaking from behind the microphone without any effect. Good morning. My name is Abul Hassan. You can call me Abu. That might make your life easier. I'm here to give you a debating workshop. If you will stick around for the second part, like the practice part, then we will get to know each other and do an official introduction round. Right now I'm going to start a little bit quickly because we don't have a lot of time. I will get to know you throughout this lecture workshop thing. There are a couple of things that we need to do today. First, we have to identify why we are here. So why debating is important. Why it's relevant. Can anyone help me with that?
To get your ideas out.
To get your ideas out? So in the public, you mean, out there? Okay, so
get your ideas out. I wrote down to get your ideas out
both externally and internally. With externally, I would mean in this context, with the general public, so people who might disagree, for instance, with our ideas, people that we need to persuade to win them over for our side, people that we need to persuade in order to change the world, for instance. I mean, we are interacting with public discourse. And I wrote internally, that is with our friends, or with our comrades, and it is kind of dodgy to say whether that's internal or external, so we won't make that distinction. But debating is also important for yourself. If you are good at debating, if you are good with argumentation, you have the ideas of your own, how should I put this, quite clearly in your mind. You have those ideas elaborated, you have arguments for your ideas and for your beliefs, for your opinions that you hold. And I think this is quite an important thing for the clarity of thinking and for critical thinking in general. Does that make sense, more or less? So does that already sufficiently show the relevance of debating? Okay, then we have maybe a prior question that I should have asked you before. What is debating? Yes?
Expressing yourself.
Expressing yourself? then is debating different from communication then? Or from speech?
More arguments.
Okay, so debating has to do with expressing yourself and has to do with arguments. Is that correct? Can we add something to that, or can we make the definition a little bit clearer?
Debating, you have
Yeah, in debating you have someone you are debating with. It can be an opponent. Quite likely, if you have a debate in mainstream media, it is going to be an opponent. It can also be a comrade, for instance, that is your debating partner at that moment, someone that you debate with, someone that you argue with. Debating has to do with communication and argumentation, as we said. So debating is actually presentation and argumentation, nothing more. So you have very good and good arguments, and you present them also in a very good manner. That is what debating is about. What do you mean exactly?
If you are debating, for example, about what is anarchism, and there are several opinions about it, and at the end, then you say, hey, we are on a higher level, we have now a more better idea about it.
Yes, debating is also a means exactly to get better understanding of things. That's why it's important for your comrades. That's why I did not want to call debating something that you only use with opponents, but also with your comrades and with yourself. So very, very, very true, I would say. Yes, debating is important to reach a higher level of understanding of many things.
And persuasion.
Yes, I would say very good. And I would also say that this is the thing that is quite often in debating workshops in the mainstream, if you give a debating workshop at university, it is about persuasion. So they would say, debating is about persuasive speech, nothing more. And the reason why I did not say that, I want to keep it till the end, but very good that you mentioned that, is pure debating, a nice debate, is actually not about that. You persuade each other with good arguments. And in a debate, as you just mentioned, you try to reach a higher level of understanding by analyzing properly, by analyzing an issue, by giving good analysis, giving good arguments. And then you persuade each other. It's not a context. It's not a contest. In real life, however, quite often it is a contest. So that's why today we have three things that we speak about. Presentation, very shortly, because we don't have time for that. Argumentation, that is going to be the beef of this small workshop. And the third thing is persuasion. Is that a deal? Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start.
Presentation. You just said what presentation was about, right?
Expressing yourself.
Communication, we would say. That's what presentation is. Is that correct? Am I giving a presentation at this moment?
Yes.
Yes, I am. What is good presentation? Speaking clearly, bringing your points across clearly.
Well, it was actually the same, being understandable.
Being understandable, very good. What else?
I often think that if people give their opinion, I could like, if people can say where they come from. So if you like, not like ethnicity, but if you say like, so these are my opinions about fruits.
Yes.
And then I would also say what my experience is, because I read these books, or okay, I worked in the market, or that's a good presentation that you could or if you have an argument, say, and these are feminist arguments.
Okay, I would say this is a strategy.
Okay.
And it is absolutely linked with presentation. Presentation in the narrow sense, then I think I mainly, at least for myself, I mainly mean the way how you speak, how you bring across a message. So presentation is about communication. You have a sender, you have a means, and you have a receiver. This is something that we should keep in mind. we will not dig into presentation theory or many tips, because I think many of us already know that. So quite a lot of people would say, don't put your hands in your pockets when you are standing in front of a big audience. However, I would say, hey, if I speak like this and I'm standing in front of you, there's nothing wrong with that, right? So presentation rules also are very arbitrary. There are just two things that I would like to mention about presentation. That is the receiver thing. So when you are presenting, the only rule that presentation has, if you can see my hand is still in my pocket, so let's see if you think that is annoying. The only presentation rule there is that your presentation needs to fit your audience and your emotion. So, for instance, if you are angry, your presentation, the tone, your volume, the way of how you speak, needs to fit that emotion. That's important, and it needs to fit the audience that you speak with. That's the only rule. All the other things are arbitrary. If you're very confident with presentation, you can do whatever you like. There is one very important thing, one very important tip if you present in front of a big audience, so if you have a public debate, that is nerves. So how do you deal with nerves?
Your own nerves.
We tend to get nervous because presentation is actually like, or debating as well, when you speak in a debate, it's like speaking with your friends. If you do it like speaking with your friends, then you do a good job. Because we are excellent communicators. We have been doing that since we were very young. But when we are in a social position that we are not used to, like speaking in front of a big audience, then we get nervous. Because that we're not used to being in that position. But how do we deal with that? And obviously, have you ever been nervous? Yeah, in front of a big audience? A huge stage fright. Have you ever been on stage?
Yeah.
So what did you do?
I was having an exam,
actually.
But I was
singing.
So
that.
See?
Already. Don't make her nervous. You had a singing exam, you were saying?
Yeah, I had a singing exam on a...
Okay, okay. Let's see if I can help you with that. But
I'm not going to sing.
You're not going to sing? Okay, let's. Then I won't ask that. Yes?
My first speech for the University of Suriname, as I was a new teacher, was written out the first 5 minutes. But then I dropped silent anyway after the 5 minutes.
Okay, so.
I had to regroup and I just continued to chat.
Okay. So you regroup, yes?
Well, I don't know. It's maybe a practical point, but I'm quite nervous when I have to speak in front of audiences.
Yes.
I did it once or twice, and I always try to focus on a point on the wall behind the people, so you don't have to look at the people directly. And that helps to lower the nerves.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Very good. Any other tip?
Think the people are not against you.
Think the people are not against you? Okay. We can write them out in a bit. I think we can do that afterwards. I would say how to deal with nerves has to do with using your imagination. I won't write that down. You can remember that. It has to do with using your imagination. You visualize how you are nervous. So you are prepared for your nerves. Quite often, people see... For instance, I was nervous, I think, 5 minutes ago. And I hope that I did not disturb you with that. And before I came here, I thought, damn, I might get nervous because I'm tired and maybe I'm not that confident. And I was supposed to do this workshop with my brother, who is also very good. So I might get nervous. How will I react? I was thinking of that. And I said, oh, well, I have nice people in my audience. They will say, ah, he's a little bit nervous. That's not a big deal. And so I just ignore my nerves. This is what works. Yes?
How do you handle with somebody... very critical, opposite, and well speak.
So, okay, so...
I sometimes had I had to speak for a group, and there was somebody like that sort of person.
Was he evil?
Yeah, a little bit evil to me.
Okay.
Yeah, like to, and I started nervous. I had to, oh, wow.
Okay.
And that was that was already his reason to do that, but yeah.
How to deal with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I postpone the response to that question? I just finished the thing about imagination, and maybe later in the workshop we come to this. Yeah. And if I forget, just this is a promise, all of you should remind me. So A, respond to that question, how to deal with evil people who are articulate. The way how to deal with your nerves is imagine how you are going to be nervous and how you should deal with that. Well, I don't look at the audience directly. You know yourself better than anyone else. You know how to work with that. If I would know that when I get nervous, I would do this with a pen, then I would not take a pen with me on stage. So, because I thought of that. It can be very simple. If I know that I cannot look people in the eyes, then I know that before it starts, I already pick a nice spot, or I decide a moment where I pick a nice spot and I will continue looking at that spot. A lot of people would say, hey, you didn't look everyone in the eye. Becoming silent, for instance. It's a strategy. It's an imperfect strategy, obviously, because it would be better not to get nervous. But all of us tend to get nervous. So you think of how you react to your nerves and what strategy you should apply or employ in order to counter the negative effects of your nerves. And it can be a lot of things. So that's why I did not want to give an immediate answer, because I have my strategy. I know once I was standing in front of a group and they said, just imagine it was a group of female students, all of them, because it was pedagogy that I was giving a workshop for pedagogy, and it tends to be a lot of females following that course at university. And they said, well, I know, I imagine everyone being in his underwear when I'm giving a presentation. And they said, so should I do that? And they didn't like that when I made that remark. But everyone has his own way to deal with it. Okay? Does this sound reasonable? I was seeing Sophia looking like, hmm. But, okay. Okay, if it's clear, then we move on. Then we go to argumentation. That is the most important part. Let's see how much time we have left. It's 11:30. We have until 12:30. Let's take a break at 12. Just a break of 5 minutes. Is that okay? Okay, and then we come back. So argumentation. What is an argument?
It's a mean to not clarify, to support your main statement.
It's a means to support your main statement. So it has to do with supporting a statement. Proof. Okay. I didn't realize that if I write it down, then I think, it makes sense. So, what else? What is it? I mean, is this how you would explain to a 5-year-old what an argument is? I mean, I think it's correct, but this is not the full explanation, right?
I think the word itself, explanation, should be there.
Explanation? You also said like clarification, but what is the main reason why we apply arguments?
To persuade people,
and what goes prior?
Convince,
right? So I think persuading and convincing is more or less the same in this context.
You're meeting a counter argument or something.
You meet a counter argument, we can rebut arguments, but what is an argument, right? At elementary school, children once told me, an argument is a reason why. And I would say that's the best definition. It's the very clear definition. The argument is the reason why you hold a particular belief or a particular opinion. And it is very important to realize that we don't respect every opinion. I mean, at least myself personally, I don't respect every opinion. If an opinion does not have proof or justification, you can say, with arguments, then I don't see any reason to respect that opinion. Unless it would be an opinion Something about, I think this is pretty, I don't think blue is pretty. I mean, yeah, all right, fine, don't justify that. But it's about, if it's about something social or political or whatever, I wouldn't respect that opinion. Make sense? Okay, so an argument is a reason why. It is a justification for an opinion, for a position, you can say, or for a statement. And it serves as proof. And we will come back to the word proof in a bit. I will look to, we should take a look at what an argument is in a more sophisticated manner. So I say sophisticated like this. At philosophy courses, they will tell you an argument is a piece of discourse containing premises and conclusions. Do we know what that is? Okay, so an argument contains conclusions and premises. So what that means is arguments have assumptions. A premise is an assumption, an argumentative assumption. So it's not every sort of assumption. So I just assume God exists. Yes, if I do that for the sake of argumentation, then it's a premise. Does that make a little bit clear what it is? Okay, so a premise is more or less an assumption, or we can call it a step of analysis. And a conclusion is not the end conclusion, but it can be a sub-conclusion in the argument. I think this needs to be illustrated to be more clear, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's illustrate it. Should we pick a debate? Should we pick a motion that something, a belief that all of us probably on this festival share? Something about society.
Racism?
Should we? I think racism is quite a good one, but I would have. I prefer something like capitalism, or should we? Do we all think capitalism more or less has bad stuff in it? I mean, I don't know. Should we take that? Is capitalism bad?
Yeah.
Is capitalism bad?
Yeah.
All right, so it is bad. Why is capitalism bad?
Selfish.
Sorry?
Selfish.
It's selfish? So let's take the other sheet. So an argument is a reason why. We immediately start with asking why. Why is racism bad? Selfishness.
Capitalism, right?
Yeah, capitalism.
Under profit? Yes, it places profit over people.
Profit over people. Okay. What else?
Between poor and rich.
Unfair.
Poor, rich.
It's expensive in this field.
What else? I heard one thing else.
Unfair.
It's unfair. Okay. Do you think we have an argument now? So if someone tells you, so why is capitalism bad? You just say, well, it leads to... it enlarges the gap between poor and rich. It puts profit over people. It is unfair and it exploits and alienates people. Is that an argument?
I'll add one. It's about to cooperate and about competition instead
competition
of cooperation.
Instead of cooperation. Okay?
That's also killing itself.
It's self-defeating?
Yeah.
Okay. But is this an argument?
In the end, everyone here is the victim. Well, a few rich blokes walking away from that.
Okay. Maybe they like it. But how can we make an argument from this?
To prove every point of these.
So we have to prove all these things.
Yeah.
And so in other words, these are no arguments. Right? The argument is not about the statement that you make, but it is the proof for that statement. It is the justification of a statement. Okay? And what I meant by sub-conclusion is this. So our end conclusion is capitalism is bad. Our sub-conclusion of our argument, of our arguments are, it puts profit over people, it is unfair, it favors competition instead of cooperation, and these kind of things. Okay? Then we spoke also about premises, about steps of analysis. Because an argument contains an internal structure. So when you give a speech, for instance, we have a structure. We speak about presentation, argumentation, persuasion. That's what we just said. But there is also an internal structure in the argument. This is the structure that is most important now in this workshop. The structure looks as follows. You have premise number one leads to premise number two. Then you have premise number three together with premise number two. Oh, by the way, you had four and five and six together leading to three. All of these premises lead to a conclusion. It looks like logic, you can say. There is internally a structure in an argument. And what we mean by premises is this, steps of analysis. For instance, you can say it's unfair. This is the subconclusion that we have. And then what we need to have over here is capitalism favors a small elite over the majority of a population. Premise number one would be, well, it leads to the most people being poor and just a small minor elite being rich. These kind of things. This is how an argument looks like. And I think what we need to do now is pick one of these and show it and prove it. So which one should we pick? Capitalism is unfair. Right? I would say capitalism unfair is more or less similar to it exploits people. Yeah? I mean, that's just one of the reasons why capitalism is unfair, I would say. It exploits a lot of people for the benefit of a small number of people. Okay, so let's start with capitalism is unfair. How do we show that? Statistics? Yeah, sorry?
With statistics which say how many people are poor and how many are rich from one producing one product, for example.
Okay, so with statistics.
Yeah.
So we take statistics right now, for instance, we can say, well, 3 billion people on this planet live in poverty at this moment. A majority of people live in misery, more or less, on minority of maybe 15% are not in misery. Is this how we do it?
Yeah.
But did we then show that it's actually because of capitalism that this is the case? Maybe it's because of dictatorships. Right? Yes?
Maybe it's unfair because people with start capital have more advantages than people with nothing.
So start, okay, so we don't start from equal positions, you mean?
Yeah.
So should we call this birthright or unequal opportunities? Something like that? Okay, so unequal opportunities. What else? You guys had like a couple of workshops on debating, so maybe you know this. How would you argue that capitalism is unfair because you have to do that in 2 days? Okay, so it is inherent to capitalism that just the small people are rich. Okay, why? According to you, this is what it means. I think if you ask any people in the street, 2 days ago I was watching Hard Talk on BBC, and someone was explaining why capitalism sucks brilliantly, a lot better than we do, by the way. And then they said, so you're against capitalism? He said, no, 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 that's not what capitalism is. I said, damn, he was almost there, but why? That for you, this is the definition of capitalism. For a lot of people, this is not the definition of capitalism. So what we are looking for in an argument is not this statement, but an analysis why the structures of capitalism lead to the exploitation of most people, leads to having most people poor and a small number of people rich.
It puts money beside the wealth of people.
Okay. It puts profit over people. How does it do that?
It doesn't make an organization run also in the future by optimizing the profit, but it maximizes the profit.
profit. It wants to have as much profit as possible, and it takes for granted that some people will suffer from it.
Okay, so it takes that for granted. Okay. But that is not a necessary outcome of capitalism. If we have an absolutely free market and if people would be genuinely free, then we would see that you have the best allocation of sources and resources in a capitalist society, because freedom will dictate that. Right? Okay. As a starting position. After you make profit?
Like you have a fabric.
Okay.
The CEOs get more money than...
Yeah, but I mean, it's the choice of the employers that they work for that CEO, is it?
But that's capitalism.
Yeah, but then it's about choice. That's nice, right? It's consent.
That's not choice because there is no alternative.
There is no alternative.
Well, there are alternatives, of course, but it's not a choice. It's not like saying, oh, well, you just search yourself another job then if you're not completely happy, because that's not...
But that CEO worked hard, right, to get in that position?
Well, he thinks he works hard, but I don't know.
Okay. He thinks he works hard, but he didn't work hard.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
There are only a few CEOs.
I think they didn't work hard. You can say that safely, right? I mean.
That's the problem. There are a few CEOs, and it has to do with power.
Yep.
Money is power. If you don't have money, you don't have power. That is capitalism, because capitalism is immoral. It doesn't have to do with good or bad. It's immoral. It's only if you got the money, then you get the power.
It's a power structure that's been around since colonization or whatever. Extremely like fundamental power structures where people...
Okay, okay. So inherent power, like the power structures lead to different opportunities when people get born.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, okay. So regardless, even if the starting positions are equal, the minute you get some sort of inequality, the minute some people make profit, as you said, you will have inequalities that will perpetuate themselves.
Yeah, so they will. The ones that have a bit more, they will be in a position to benefit from the profit.
Okay, so we're getting somewhere. I think one thing is important to realize. So I think we are here as anti-capitalists, and we have troubles with actually explaining why we are anti-capitalist. It is apparently one of our fundamental beliefs. It seems to be a little bit unjustified to ourselves. It seems to be hard to explain. This is one of the reasons why debating is so important. I would say that if we are anti-capitalist, if someone wakes us up at 4 a.m. and say, why are you anti-capitalism? You say, because it's unfair, and regardless of the starting positions, even if they are equal, it still leads to inequality, and it will perpetuate itself, and it will make people unhappy, and these kind of things. And you explain that perfectly. So that's actually how we should be, because this is one of our fundamental beliefs. Statements that we have trouble with justifying. So it's a very good exercise to ask why. I'm not really pro free market bullshit that we just said. So let's take this. We had the unequal opportunities. I think it's quite a fundamental point. You mentioned it. Sophia just mentioned it. Unequal opportunities. Regardless of starting positions, the minute you have disparities in the amount of capital that people possess, you will have inequalities. And those inequalities will get larger, 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 and larger. Is this the problem that we have with capitalism? One of the problems. Yes?
I would also say the fact that if you don't work, if you don't have any money, what position are you then in? How to get housing, how to get food. If you would take it without any money, then you would get suppressed or oppressed by the state because of laws of property.
Okay.
So therefore you have to work, and this force,
okay, so you have state repression if you do not conform to the capitalist system.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but that doesn't have to be. That is also another...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
What's your name, by the way?
My name?
Yeah.
Murat.
Murat. Okay, so Murat says this is not inherent to capitalism. I think it is very important first to start with capitalism in itself. So just capitalism, because people might say, well, I have... I don't know, a libertarian society in which there is no government repression, but there is free trade and capital and these kind of things, and money dictates power and all these stuff. But there's no state repression. So.
I think also, like, one thing, the capital, and then already said it, it puts money in the center. Money is the most important thing. The whole process is in service of the money. And you can have another system where the humans, the well-being,
yeah. Okay. Let's.
I think it's important to realize, or not only to put in, people are forced to work like this or that, but that it's inherent to capitalism that people will choose to work for someone else, or to, it doesn't matter if, like, if you consider it a free labor market or a free credit market, that they will also choose to borrow money to work for themselves and pay a lot of interest. because still they will be a little bit better off than if they don't. So that they will do that, but then the ones that are in control of capital, they will get all the profit from, or most of the profit from. So
okay.
They won't be richer, richer, but the people, the employees or the ones borrowing money will do this still because they will be a little bit better off.
Okay, this is very important. I think the main thing, it's now about time that we figure this out, so we will not brainstorm a lot more. I think the main thing in capitalism is that we should challenge first the basic assumptions behind the capitalist idea. So one of the basic assumptions behind it is private property. If you have money, if you have your property, then it's yours, regardless if other people deserve it more or need it more. You deserve it because it's yours. We can say, well, that does not make any sense, right? It doesn't have to make any sense because it's not well explained. Or people will be a lot happier, will be a lot healthier, more or less, and wealthier if this is not the case, if there is no private property. So if people who control the means of production, actually we don't want people to control the means of production, but if people, for instance, with a lot of possessions, share those possessions and are not entitled to them, so they are not their possessions. That might lead to a happier society, right? Or a happier community, or I don't know how to call it.
But if you use that as an argument, don't you have to prove it?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's do that.
I don't think what you just mentioned, private property, that's the start of the capital, but I don't think it's there where it went wrong. Because most people in the world will want to have some private property.
Obviously.
Because that can give them happiness. If you take it away, maybe that doesn't mean they're going to get happier.
Obviously.
So where capitalism goes wrong, it becomes bigger and bigger. When you think now about capitalism, think about multinationals and banks and credits and countries working their ass off. They can work as much as they want, as hard they want. They will never get this, pay this rent. It happened like best case in the third world.
Okay. Obviously, that's true. So, I mean, like, I would say, yes, I am entitled to this sweater. more or less. Maybe we can challenge that too. But I'm not entitled to the 1 million euros that I have on my bank account. So not every form of private property is wrong, we can say. It's kind of nice to have shirts, but yes, we can say that's true. I would say that if we make that distinction properly, this might be something that we can challenge best. So capitalism sucks because of unequal opportunities. Why unequal opportunities suck? Because they put people in poverty, they put people in misery, right? There's unequal opportunities because people will not be able, for instance, to get their means of livelihood that they need. They are not able to realize themselves, to have spare time, to have fun, etc., because they do not have the possessions to do that. And capitalism does not disqualify that. Does that make sense? If you can see, I am struggling myself to formulate the arguments perfectly.
I think it gives people like the free license for the right of the strongest, you know, like capitalism, you know.
I think you can say that private ownership of means of production leads to bigger concentration of private ownership, which leads to bigger inefficiency and less happiness because the ownership of everything is getting into the hands of smaller and smaller people. And so the system will get more and more unfair because it's the dynamic of the system and it's the basis.
Okay, I think we all agree on this. The point is that we have to explain all these things. So obviously, and it's very tough. And there is, at a certain moment, we say, okay, you reached a reasonable limit of answering why questions. But what the most important thing that you just said, I would say, is the concentration of wealth. Okay, so let's explain why capitalism automatically or inherently leads to the concentration of wealth. So let's assume that leads to unequal opportunities and bad things. So how does capitalism lead to the concentration of wealth?
A lot of people work for capitalist corporations, but all the value that's produced by these people only goes to a few people.
So a lot of people work for just a small number of people who get like all the value that is produced. How come? Why? Can there be a capitalist owner who says, well, yeah, fine, I mean...
No, because then he would make no profit.
He would not make profit. Yes. Why not? His company might grow.
Yes, but if he would pay all his workers exactly the same thing that they produce, the same value they produce, then he wouldn't get any value himself.
Okay, so if he would... Okay, and
it
is in...
It
wouldn't be capitalism. So capitalism, according to you, actually is the definition of exploitation. It's synonymous.
I think capitalism means that that money makes more money. So if you have a lot of money, you will make more money than somebody who has little money. And so in the end, the people with more money will get all the money, and the people with little money will get no money at all.
You can say also...
Just let's stick over there. So capitalism means that money leads to more money, people with money will get more money, people with no money have no money. Why? Why doesn't capitalism lead to people who have money get more money and give that to Africa? Selfishness?
But they also needed to compete with other companies.
They needed to compete, yeah, but they make a pact. The companies make a pact. They make a lot of money, they trick us into buying all their crap, and then they give it away. Sorry?
If they do that, their system will crumble or fall down.
They need poor workers.
Because then the
value?
The value of the products will...
They will decrease. No, they actually have, like I said, they have deals. So they have deals among themselves in order to control pricing and values and these kind of things. Then it's no capitalism anymore.
The capitalist relies on a hierarchical.
Yeah, I don't know that.
and if there's no higher position for him, if all the workers are equal to the capitalists, then there's no more capitalism. So there's no more. There's no more value for him to take. No more profit for him to take. So that I think the point of being the manager or the CEO or whatever stops then, as he's not producing value either.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I would say it makes sense, but a lot of people would say, well, we can still call that capitalism.
It's also the element that even if the capitalist gives all his profit away, the capitalist is still under control of what's being produced, how a society will look like, and all that power is still concentrated in a very small group.
Okay. Okay. I think, I mean, I kept time. I think we went 5 minutes out of the schedule that I have on my paper. I wanted to do this, like, brainstorm and speak about this. Can I just say what I think? Is that okay? I would say everything that you said is correct. And everything that we have mentioned so far about capitalism is correct. However, in a debate on capitalism, so if you are debating capitalism with someone who is not anti-capitalist, if you're debating with someone who is anti-capitalist, you can say... But if you're debating with someone who is not anti-capitalist, I would not speak of capitalism immediately. It is very tough to give a proper definition because they made it a very dodgy term. They made it a very intangible word. And it's very tough to say, well, this is capitalism, that's why it's bad. Quite often, this is the strategy that I've been trying, is to say, no, capitalism can accommodate for that. No, capitalism can accommodate for that. This is not inherent in the system. So what is a better strategy, actually, to debate this is just to take those elements that we mentioned. For instance, putting profit over people is unfair. And explain that perfectly. And then people would say, yeah, that makes sense. That's it. The debate is over. Don't start necessarily about capitalism. You say, well, this is what is happening in capitalist societies. So this is something that we should need to change. You shouldn't care too much about that name.
Then you still have the subjectiveness of the, well, let's say fairness, unfair. What is fair? What is unfair? What I think is unfair may be something completely different than what a capitalist thinks is unfair.
Okay.
When I think exploitation of people is unfair, I think most people here will agree. But a capitalist might say, well, I don't think it's unfair that someone in Bangladesh has to work for sewing t-shirts for no money.
That's the debate that you will have.
But that's the subject.
Yeah, but this is with everything the case, and I think this is the debate that you will have. Quite often, you will who have all those wonderful to capitalism. What you do is just take... We also want people to be free and happy. That according to them, capitalism makes people free and happy. We say, no, capitalism makes people unfree and unhappy. So you have that debate and show why that is the case, and then you show why that is unfair. And sometimes, if someone says very outrageous things, like, for instance, the father of modern capitalism, Milton Friedman, you can say, shut the fuck up, you're saying outrageous things. For instance, Milton Friedman gives an analysis why it is so good for women to get underpaid, because it improves their competitive position. And, I mean, you can give arguments why that sucks, and if he said, no, that's good, then you can say, shut up. So you don't go eternally with this argumentation. But the way how I would personally fight capitalism, for instance, is I would take... any of these things, and I would not link them immediately to capitalism. I would do that in the end. I would start with, this is what is happening currently, this is something that should change. And if the capitalists say, yes, I agree, then that's fine. Then, okay, change it. That would be the best strategy, instead of having this debate about, well, this is not capitalism, this is capitalism. So let's take any of them. Let's take competition versus cooperation, for instance, and let's elaborate that argument and then have a break. We are 5 minutes late, I'm sorry. So, competition versus cooperation, competition is bad. Why is competition good, according to the supporters of it? Because it gives people incentive to produce. Otherwise, people will not work. Otherwise, people will get lazy. Otherwise, people will produce to survive. And, yeah, you extinct as a society. So, motivation. Why is competition bad and cooperation is better? Is because competition makes you enemies. Competition leads to exploitative positions. And you can explain that quite well. So this is, for instance, one of the tenets of capitalist society, competition. You can say, no, competition sucks. Sorry? It leads to rivalry. Okay, how does it lead to rivalry? This is very elementary, sorry for posing this question. It leads to rivalry because you have to defeat someone in order to have a good position. So it's about defeating. Competition leads to rivalry, it's about defeating. So why is the rivalry bad?
You got winners and losers.
You got winners and losers. Okay.
So rivalry leads to winners and losers.
To get on top, you also push people down to a position that you weren't happy in the first place.
Okay. So to be a winner, you actually make people a loser. So you actually put someone down. You kind of oppress someone by having a competitive advantage, by gaining the competitive, by winning the competition, you can say. Okay, so rivalry is bad because you have winners and losers. Winners, winning leads to, I think we need another sheet. Winning leads to exploitation. That's what we say. Let's not use the word exploitation immediately. It leads to oppressing someone, pushing someone down. Is this enough? Okay, very good. So we have to make this, I would say this is how an argument looks like more or less. I have to make it better. We'll make it a little bit clearer. This is what the argument comes down to. And you can give it a lot of beef with a lot of rhetoric. We will do that with the practice session. But this is where it comes down to. And you have to make it stronger by incorporating rebuttals of the opposite side in it. So to make the argument good, well, competition leads to rivalry, we said. We call this competition is about defeating people. Therefore, it leads to rivalry, right? So premise number one is competition is about defeating people. Premise number two is rivalry. So yeah, competition leads to rivalry. Then rivalry means winners and losers, we said. We can do that before. Defeating people means that you have winners and losers. So we can skip the rivalry part, for instance. So we can say competition leads to the need to defeat people. Therefore, you have winners and losers. This is a statement. To win, you have to push someone down. Therefore, your winning leads to misery of others. So in other words, we can conclude that competitive society means that being wealthy and healthy and happy means actually making others unhappy and unhealthy, right? And unwealthy. So quite often you say, look for your happiness in the happiness of others. No, look for your happiness in the unhappiness of others. This is what competition leads to. Okay, this is actually it. So we can say, this is premise number one. This is premise number two. This is number three. And this is number four. This is number five. So what we just said is, number one leads to number two, right? Number three is independent from number one and two, if we look at it. Winning is, I mean, if the need to defeat leads to winning or losers, doesn't have to do with that winning is pushing someone down in competitive society. Winning leads to number four. If winning is pushing someone down, therefore your winning leads to the misery of others. Three leads to number four. Two and four together lead to number five. Right? This is how the argument looks like. This is the internal structure. This would be a good argument. However, it is not complete yet, because we have to incorporate the rebuttals. And the rebuttals, quite likely, are that this is impossible. What people tend to say is, this is impossible because you will not have a productive society anymore, no one is producing food, people will be unhappy, living in misery, and that is also poverty. That is also being unwealthy, even if you are cooperating more or less. So you have to show the possibility and the feasibleness of a society that is not competitive. But we do that after the break. So. Sorry?
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Ja, 5 minuten. Waarschijnlijk worden er 10, daarom zeg ik 5.
Maar ik probeer het maar.
Ja, ik heb nog steeds in Brussel trouwens.
Wat zeg je?
Zit jij nog steeds in Brussel?
In Brussel?
Ja, dacht ik.
Ik heb nooit in Brussel gezeten.
Oh, ik dacht een paar jaar geleden was je hier ook, of niet?
Dat is mijn broer.
Serieus?
Ja, dat is mijn broer.
Serieus?
Die was hier een paar jaar geleden. We wonen allebei in Rotterdam.
Ja, oké. Okay. Ja, want je had toen wat gewonnen, geloof ik. Iets met debat.
Hij is Nederlands kampioen debatteren geweest in 2008. Dat is
jammer. Wat jouw e-mail is?
Ja, tuurlijk. Ik zal hem afschrijven.
Ik ben namelijk een boek aan het schrijven over. En op de achterflap staat. Het is namelijk voor kinderen van 10 tot 12. De achterflap staat. Het is jouw keuze. Je kan in de competitie gaan en of je kan in de samenwerking.
Okay.
En dus het boek heeft, zeg maar, de pagina's zijn de bovenste helft en de onderste helft. De bovenste helft is de slechte afloop en de onderste helft is de goede afloop.
Okay.
En de bovenste helft gaat dus over competitie en de onderste helft over dat we allemaal maar gelukkig zijn.
Okay.
Dus ik wil je een draft sturen.
Lijkt me tof. Lijkt me tof. Lijkt me heel leuk om te lezen.
Ja.
Oké. Ben je nu klaar? Nee, we hebben pauze en we gaan zo weer door.
Ja, want jullie moeten half en acht zijn toch?
Ja.
Sheila is a part of good life. Yeah, Sheila is a part of this. Sheila is. Sheila is. Na 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 yeah. There's a war coming down between my breast and I. I don't want no war.
dream.